You notice over the holidays when the family is together and you see the youngsters all sitting next to each other and nobody's speaking, they're all on their devices. Yes.
And a lot of times they're speaking to each other.
Susan Pinker is a developmental psychologist, columnist, and broadcaster who writes about social science. And her latest book is called The Village Effect, How Face-to-Face Contact Can Make Us Healthier, Happier, and Smarter. Susan, we have a lot to talk about.
Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi there, Bob and Marianne.
Where do we start here? Your book is really helpful for families. It's helpful for businesses. And it seems to me, and we were talking about this earlier, that there is a bit of a backlash. People are starting to realize that they've got to start putting away their phones and talking to each other. Is the pendulum starting to swing back the other way?
Well, I think it is. It's not only rude to look at your phone when you're with another person, but you're really losing an incredible opportunity, because what I learned researching this book that I never knew before is that there's a whole range of impacts of connecting face-to-face that I never knew about before.
Now, does it matter what kids, for example, teenagers, are doing on their phones? Is it all bad? I mean, if they're texting with each other, they're at least having contact with each other. I get really upset when I see that my daughter's on her phone and I peek over to see what she's doing. She's playing a hockey game.
Well, you know, you can't regulate every minute of your teenager's time, but we do know that the more time teens spend online, the less socially engaged they are and the lonelier they feel. So even though it might be what they want to do at that moment, you know, if they're texting their people three times as often as they call them or see them in person, which is actually the case for most American kids now, it's not the greatest thing for them ultimately.
And as far as businesses go, what we were talking about earlier today was some management folks are just going to a weekly session where they get together and then they make everybody put their devices away. Are more businesses getting into this?
Well, what I know is that the businesses that are taking face-to-face contact seriously are experiencing, A, more cohesion among their working groups, and B, better productivity. Essentially, what people didn't know before is that having your workers contact each other and socialize with each other during work and at break times increases their productivity. And it helps them, you know, helps them solve problems, makes them feel happier in the here and now, increases their well-being. So not only will it reduce their sick days, but they're actually more productive on the job.
But, I mean, it's really very admirable, very good to be able to do this. But when you separate it out and you have these meetings, whether it's within a family or within a work environment, it still doesn't really solve the problem, right? Because you write, for example, one of your chapters about teenagers is called Missing, a part of it is called Missing the Funeral. And this is because some people only contact people through Facebook, and then, you know, they miss important events if they're not on Facebook.
Right. I mean, obviously, I'm not advocating everybody throwing their phones and tablets and laptops, you know, in the dump. I think that they're extremely important to get information, to share information, to research new ideas, but they're just not that great for deepening human connections or solving complex human problems. So it's true that a lot of people are not using newspapers anymore to announce births and deaths. They're using Facebook to make those announcements, and that's caused me to have to check my page a little bit more often than once a week. But what we're really learning from the research that we didn't know before is that the digital connection, what we're doing online, can't replace the face-to-face in terms of the impact that face-to-face connecting has on us, on our health and our happiness and our ability to keep our memories, actually.
Yeah, it's something we go through, and I mentioned around holiday time, especially when you see everybody together and you notice that the kids aren't speaking to one another. What I'm curious about, and really this is kind of a new phenomenon, so I guess we don't really know yet, but when they start doing studies years from now about the way people interact and the way folks conduct business and so forth, growing up in this environment, how will that manifest itself, do you think?
Well, we're starting, some studies are starting to emerge, and I'll give you kind of a little preview of what we know so far. Admittedly, we need to study this more, but what we know so far, for example, is that when you text your teenagers and give them support through your phone, you're having absolutely no impact on their levels of stress, and this is something that I think is surprising to most parents.
What do you mean by that? I'm not sure what that means by that, because my kid gets stressed when I text her.
Oh, I'm talking about the reverse. So let me explain this experiment where they went out to stress out kids on purpose by having them solve math and word problems within a time limit in front of an audience. And what they did is they had them spit in a cup so they could measure through their saliva how much cortisol they were producing, meaning how stressed out they were. They had them do that before and after they did that problem solving in front of an audience, and then they divided them into four groups. One group got a visit from mom, one group got a phone call from mom, one group got a text from mom, and one group got nothing from mom, like zero contact. And what they discovered is that cortisol levels, the higher your cortisol, the more stressed you are. The cortisol levels dropped the greatest amount for those who got to see their mom in person. Next level of cortisol came with a phone call from mom, you know, how'd you do, honey, I'm thinking of you, etc., etc. But the surprise was that those mothers who texted their kids after the stressful event had no impact on their cortisol or stress levels. In other words, It was the same as no contact at all.
That is surprising, because you would think that some nurturing words would be better than nothing, right?
Right, but it's not necessarily about the words, is it? Now, when you want to communicate how much you love your partner, you can send them a little emoticon or say, I love you, honey, but nothing is like a real hug or a real kiss, right? And nobody would say it's the same.
Right, it's in addition to.
We communicate with our kids. Everybody's confusing the two ways of sharing information. You know, certainly the words are the same, but there's no eye contact. There's no touching. There's no hugging. There's no patting. You can't even hear the expression of emotion in somebody's voice, right? So all of those clues are extremely important, and when we hear or see those clues, it releases hormones into our bloodstream, and those hormones have an impact on our stress levels and our resilience.
Here's what I think about. I remember as a kid choosing up sides and playing ball and so forth, organizing ourselves. And now with all the organized programs in school and all of that, and with the communication not being face-to-face anymore, what kind of managers will we have? What kind of organizers will we have? How ready are these kids going to be for the real world, the world that doesn't exist in cyberspace?
Well, it's true that the less practice you have in reading other people's emotions from their faces and solving conflict in the here and now, the less likely you'll be able to do those things in the future. But I think I'm more concerned about what's happening at the moment. You know, preschool kids are on their screens an average of 4 hours a day. School kids are spending an average of 7 hours a day in front of a screen, more than they spend on any other activity except sleeping. And most of this is time spent alone, not with other people. And what we know is that when there's even just a screen in the room, even not their own, that there's less language directed to that child by the adults. Like for every hour of media entertainment in the room, there are 500 to 1,000 fewer adult words directed to that child. And the child speaks less too. So that means that, you know, all the video games and things that are going on, those kids are not only hearing less language, they're using less language, and they're less ready for school when they walk into the kindergarten or grade one classroom.
And what makes it even harder is that so many schools are turning to these devices for the curriculum. I know that many schools are now having the kids buy iPads so that they can receive their homework assignments on a tablet. I mean, it's getting harder and harder as a parent to be able to enforce this. I am constantly taking the phone away from my daughter for no reason other than when we're riding in the car. If she has her phone in her hand, she's checking things, and I just take it away, and then it changes the whole tone anyway, because we don't even get to have a normal conversation because she's so upset with me that I took her phone away. So,
well, you know,
we still don't talk.
I would say that, like, if you want to have really valuable face-to-face contact, is the way to do it is at the table over a meal. So, you know, in the car is nice time because you're probably alone there. But there's nothing that predicts school success and a child's happiness and achievement as family meals. And this surprised me. I didn't know this when I started out writing this book. But it's even more predictive of school success than reading to your child, which is amazing.
Hmm.
So just sitting together and looking at each other and chatting and having that kind of banter about your day that you would have over a daily meal is hugely powerful. So, you know, I think we underestimate the power of having that kind of contact and how much we affect people ourselves, you know, when you talk to them, not just your kids, but your neighbors, the casual people that you meet throughout your day.
Nobody talks to me in the car anymore, and I'll tell you something, and I meant to say this to you, Marianne. You're chastising our daughter for being on her phone, and then she puts her phone away, and I look over because you're not talking to me, and Marianne's playing Words with Friends on her phone.
That's because you've got the cousin Brucey on.
No, I lately haven't been. I've tried an experiment, Susan. I don't even turn the radio on, and I want to see how long the silence will continue in the car. And you know what? It goes on forever.
Well, the thing is that for many of us who are adults, we really do have. We're set in our ways and we do have a lot of contact with each other. And Bob and I are together way too much.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's for sure.
And that's 24/7. But for our kids, it's not happening that way. They are having relationships with, they're making plans with friends by text. They're not getting the gist of what somebody really means unless it's very evident. And I'm just wondering how much of this texting and being on your phone and communicating this way, how much of it is safe from what you've found out from all your research?
Well, I think that it has to be ramped up gradually as children get older. So what the American Pediatric Society says, and I agree, is no screen time for kids under 2. And by the way, if anybody thinks that kids have to have screen contact at school in order to be successful with screens in the workplace, just watch a baby with an iPhone. You know, as one tech executive said, we make this as easy to use as toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs to learn how to use it. It's quite self-evident. But, you know, I think I would sort of mildly disagree with you, Marianne, that it's really more a problem for kids than for adults, because 30% of Americans say they're deeply lonely, mostly the middle-aged, and they have nobody to talk to. So, you know, being lonely creates a lonely fingerprint on every cell of their bodies, and certainly the kids haven't picked this up all on their own. They're learning it from us. Many parents are using their devices because it's so much more convenient than actually having to talk to their kids or spend time with their kids.
Susan, it's so good to talk to you. We want you to hold on so we can talk some more and not just text each other. The book is The Village Effect, How Face-to-Face Contact Can Make Us Healthier, Happier, and Smarter. And we'll continue with Susan Pinker right after this. We're talking with developmental psychologist and author Susan Pinker. Her book is The Village Effect, How Face-to-Face Contact Can Make Us Healthier, Happier, and Smarter. I guess, Susan, it's not new that we're healthier with personal contact. We always read these stories about married people living longer, healthier lives, and also friendships requiring face-to-face contact in order not to fade. So some of what you write about, we've kind of known, but I guess now with smartphones and so forth and texting, these things are more important to remember, aren't they?
Well, I actually don't agree that we've known them. I think, for one thing, we've only had the evidence quite recently that, for example, interacting with somebody in person has a different impact on our brains than interacting with somebody in a static way, like through a screen. That's completely new. We didn't know, for example, that kids who have a genetic predisposition towards aggression or violence really can be turned away from that by face-to-face contact and the steadying effect of a teacher or a parent. So there's actually stuff that we never knew before. Plus, you're right, though, that the way people are behaving with their devices makes it look like they've never heard this before. So, you know, and there is a third thing, which is that, you know, there are lots of things that we think are true that are not really true, and we need science to confirm them. And what we now have is a whole bunch of new evidence that was so surprising that it changed my own habits. You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been researching this book and writing this book and revising it, and my life started to change because I learned new facts.
And you're talking about because you learned about the importance of the face-to-face?
Exactly. So, for example, I used to exercise by myself. Now I swim with a team instead of swimming laps by myself because I realized two things. It's important to have that social contact as a writer who has a sort of solitary work life. And also, I'm getting more bang out of my buck in terms of the biology of exercise by exercising with other people. And also that we need not just our close contacts. That's what most of us think of as social contact. But what's really new that I think nobody knew before is that we need that middle layer of contacts, the sort of weak relationships with neighbors or shopkeepers or colleagues, people who are not like us. And what the research is telling us is you need those diverse relationships. That's what I'm calling the village. It's a
right.
metaphor for those diverse relationships to keep you breathing.
Susan, give me a little bit of advice, because I know that when I go home today with this book and I start to talk to our 14-year-old about this, she's going to be rolling her eyes and she's...
And playing her hockey game on the phone.
Yeah, and she's not going to care. And then we're going to get into another thing where I'm going to take away her phone and then we're not going to be able to talk anyway because she's so mad that I took her phone. How do I get out of this rut and how could I make her understand?
Well, you know, Marianne, I always had a rule with my kids that, you know, if I'm competing with the screen is going to win. So I didn't talk to my kids unless I turned the screen off first. You know, your 14-year-old...
Well, we do that. We do that during the conversation. But how can I get her to understand that this is something she should be practicing with her own friends, for example?
Well, you know, you can if you have a chance to talk to her, you can talk to her about some of the stories in the book of people who, for example, get depressed. The more they're on their screens, the more depressed and alienated they feel. So the research about adolescents is quite surprising. Though adolescents who are really outgoing and who make friends easily, they use their phones to do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the adolescents who are shy or find it difficult to make friends are more lonely the more time they spend online. And we do know that the more time you spend online, no matter how old you are, the less engaged you are with your own community. So the important thing is not so much to shut down the telephone, but to insist that she actually do things with other people, whether it's sports or volunteer work or you know, just working in a coffee shop where she actually has to make eye contact with people and interact.
Some of us are very lonely when we're with people who are obsessed with their phone and don't look at us when we're talking to them, Marianne.
Okay.
Well, it's a fascinating topic and a really interesting book to read, The Village Effect, How Face-to-Face Contact Can Make Us Healthier, Happier, and Smarter. Susan Pinker, I'm very glad we decided not to do this interview by email, Susan.
I'm so glad, too, and remember about those stories. There's so many stories in the book that will kind of make you change the way you look at this.
I'm there.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Talk to you
Thank
down the
you.
Road.